Looking to buy your dream home or rent that perfect apartment? With the Redfin app, you'll know the moment your next place hits the market. Set up your gotta-have-it wish list, and Redfin will send you real-time notifications for properties that match. And when you're ready to see it in person, scheduling a tour is just a tap away. Thinking about selling? Redfin can do that too. In fact, Redfin agents close twice as many deals as other agents, so they know how to get the best price for your home. And with a listing fee as low as 1%, Redfin charges half of what others often charge. So you could save big, like really big. Last year, Redfin saved home sellers $118 million. So whether you're buying, renting, or selling, Redfin's ready to help you win. Download the Redfin app and start searching today.
Greetings, travelers!
Greetings, travelers! How y'all doing? I do that like I'm expecting a response.
I love that you just did that because I'm like, are we waiting for a response? Is that a thing that's going to happen?
It's we've been doing so many public appearances. That's kind of what I'm used to now. Is I say the thing and then somebody in the audience shouts back. So I have to retune to get back onto this. So.
Oh my gosh! That's fun and silliness.
And we've been on other podcasts recently promoting the new book. So.
Yes.
Just on Into the Fray for their 500th episode. Oh my gosh, with Shannon. We love her.
Oh my gosh, it was my first time with her. So I got to be part of 500 and then she threatened me and made me say I'd come back. So I love Shannon for that. So, and if you don't listen Into the Fray, you absolutely should listen. She is brilliant, wonderful, magical, and we cannot say enough things about her. I'm going to plug our book is up for pre-order. We have some exciting news coming soon. We can't announce it till it's in hand, but there are some people that may or may not be reviewing our book for us that are pretty awesome, but we're going to wait till we have them. So super exciting. And I heavily, heavily recommend you get your print or hardcover copy of this book, which if you're watching the YouTube, you can see it. It is so much fun. It's so big and full of pictures and maps and all kinds of fun things. So, and one of, Shannon mentioned one of her favorite things is all of the Erica Eats inside. And the back of it has our friend, Stacy. So anyway, there's that. But we do have some breaking news.
Breaking news.
So the breaking news, I'm going to comment on this because it is irritating me. And so I have to comment. We don't generally talk about the Warrens or anything really related to the Warrens. We're still kind of holding that, except for it's the Warrens' grandson
son-in-law
has taken Annabelle and is now touring her and has been doing this with like vodka and go to conventions and get your picture taken. But the lore around this doll made it seem like she was the second most dangerous doll that exists, and dangerous due to the power that she supposedly wields. And the other one that we know is very, very powerful on the top of the list is our beautiful, handsome friend, Robert, who lives down in Key West with many, many friends of his. And he is adorable and we love him. But he literally is only allowed to be moved. I don't care what Zap Bagans says. He is only allowed to be moved if there is a hurricane of a caliber they don't feel they can protect him. And they just move him inland. I know you're site G for him.
Yeah,
so
for friends of Robert. Friends of Robert. Yeah. If that's what we call him for if he has to evacuate the Keys. There's one in Miami. There's another one a little more inland, a little more inland, a little more inland, a little more north, a little more north. And finally, you get to me. And then I think there's some beyond me. So if the mountains of North Carolina ever start sinking, we can move Robert even safer. I think there's even a couple out-of-country spots for him if he has to flee the country for any reasons. But yeah, no, the team behind Annabelle, I met the Warrens many, many years ago. And one of the things they've used to justify it is that they used to take some of their haunted objects on their lectures and stuff. That's true. They never took Annabelle. They took a lot of the other ones that were not as dangerous. So it does
kind of diminish. Transporting Annabelle, they had a whole story about how the car got wrecked and all this other stuff that went with trying to transport Annabelle even to where she's kept at their house.
Yeah, and now she recently went to New Orleans, and that day a famous iconic plantation burned down, so maybe there's something to that. I don't know.
I agree with you.
I'm not happy about the vodka, Annabelle vodka, just because Lorraine was very much, and Ed and Lorraine were very much stout, no drinkers. You know, they were teetotalers and they were very much against it. So that's my concern. And, you know, again, diminishing Annabelle's value a little bit, I think, by doing this. It's nice that people can get there because not everybody can go up to Connecticut. Plus, it's no longer a public museum because the neighborhood zoned them out. Yeah, you can't, not a lot of people could see Annabelle otherwise, but I'm all for her moving them to a permanent location, a safe location, and move the whole museum. Open up a real museum, but I don't know if that's ever going to happen either. But anyway, enough of that. Let's...
Well, the only reason I want to throw this out is one of two things. Either she's not as powerful as they said she is, or they are literally endangering the public. Neither one of those options is a good end result, but I'm done.
There's a third option, like when we did the Robert the Doll movie, there could be a stunt Annabelle. Just saying that too. So, because he is just regular.
There better be a stunt Annabelle. But anyway, let's get on to our better parts of this.
Drop all that, push that away. Sorry we had to bring that up even. But
yeah,
we have an awesome guest today.
Yes, we do. So let's not even wait a moment to bring her on. Here we go. Woo! Welcome, Brooke Norland.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Oh my gosh. Absolutely.
So we know who you are, Brooke, but why don't you tell the travelers at home who you are?
Yeah, I'm Brooke Moreland. I'm the creator and host of the Dark Florida podcast, where we cover all of the strange and the unusual. Boots on the ground, Bigfoot field researcher, paranormal investigator, and lover of high strangeness. So yeah, I do on the ground investigating in my free time, and I do the podcast, and I've just had so much fun just diving headfirst into this world.
I don't know if I'd go head first. I think I'd go feet first. I don't even go sometimes into this world. I love that you said you're boots on the ground, though, because, yep, you know, Mark keeps trying to put me in very precarious situations, aka the mushroom mines, things like that, where he doesn't tell me where we are. And then is like, just by the way, this is a gigantic haunted bridge you're walking on. And I'm like, fantastic. Let's just go. So what got you started in this, Brooke?
Well, my nanny actually had a sighting. So my grandmother had a Bigfoot sighting back in the day. And I always remembered that growing up. And that just kind of stuck with me. So as I got older, I wanted to know more about the phenomena myself. And so I just started going out and I made some connections. And now I have my little group that I'm able to go out and do field research with. And it's just been, it's been incredible. And I just have that kind of curious mind. And then same thing with the show. I love talking about anything strange, cryptid or paranormal, and just, I don't know, anything that's intriguing. And I feel like this world is not short of strange things. So there's always something to talk about and look into.
I love it. We call it preternatural, you know, Shirley Jackson preternatural, because we don't know what the heck it is. So I love that you're into this because all of our travelers are into it. So your grandmother had a sighting. Have you had a sighting since you've been out and about?
I have.
Ooh, do tell.
I have. Yeah. So the BFRO, I'm sure all of your listeners are probably very well aware with that organization, but the Bigfoot Field Research Organization, I went on my first expedition with them. And my field research partner, Marion, has been an investigator probably for at least 2, if not 3 decades with them.
Oh, wow.
So she's been a part of them for quite some time. She kind of got out of it for a little bit to raise a family and children, but now that she's retired, she's back into it full time. So I was going to go on my first expedition here in Florida, and I had signed all my NDAs, did all the paperwork. And she's like, hey, do you want to be a part of the scouting trip that we're going to take? And I was like, yeah, I do. So I was like, yeah, I'm there. Tell me what the dates are. So it was right after Thanksgiving. And we headed up to the Florida Panhandle to this particular campground where we were going to stay. And we were basically there to just kind of scout the locations around there. I mean, we've had reports of all kinds of weird things outside of Bigfoot, black-eyed kids, the skinwalker crawlers up there along with Bigfoot, as well as some hauntings. So this area is just a hotbed of activity, no matter which way you look at it. So it was going to be interesting. And so we headed up there and our trip was pretty benign. Nothing really happened while we were up there. I mean, we found some spots where we're like, okay, this looks promising. This will come out here with some groups. And because it's pretty organized when they do these expeditions and, you know, very well informed. So we're like looking at all the maps and it's our last night there. And in Florida, it does not get cold very often. And yes, I said November, but there's been Thanksgivings where I've been in a shorts and a t-shirt and it's hot as hell outside. So this was not one of those Thanksgivings. It was one of those rare years this past year we had where like Florida decided it was going to participate in winter.
Your three random days of winter in Florida. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it was cold. And now I'm up in the panhandle. So I like kind of live in Southwest Florida. So it's a little warmer down here generally anyway. So it was cold and it was going to get down to like in the 20s that night. And I'm just, my mind is like, did I prepare enough for this trip? Like I knew it was going to be maybe 50s, 60s, but I wasn't expecting 20s. So we're around the fire. We're having some chili. We're about to call it a night when my friend Marion realized this, that she lost her phone. So I'm like, oh my goodness. And when we had gone up there, it was still hunting season. So she had gone on a really short hike earlier in the day because there was this trail that was right near the campground that just circled back. And she's like halfway through the hike, realizes she doesn't have on her orange. She takes her bag off, throws her orange vest on and carries on. So she thinks that kind of in that moment, her phone probably fell out. And I mean, this area where we're at has no service anyway. So your phone is really pretty much useless to you other than to just tell time or take pictures because there's no service and we're in the middle of nowhere. There's not even a Walmart for like 2 hours. Nothing.
That's how you tell you're in the middle of nowhere. There's no Walmart.
No Walmart. Now, if there's Dollar General, you got a little, you're a little near civilization, but
you're a little somewhere with the Dollar General, but only a little.
I mean, there's one in the middle of the Ocala National Forest. That's why I had to make that
clear.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's why I had to make it clear. Yeah. There's no Dollar General anywhere. And so we weren't really on our phones. There was no need for it. So she didn't realize it until a few hours later when it was kind of time to go to bed. So we're like, oh man. All right. Well, we'll help you go look for it. And hopefully it's where you think it is. And so like I said, it's this freeze warning. There's this lake that's there. The mist is just kind of going off the water. It's kind of got this like creepy vibe. And the way that this trail goes, it comes right up behind these people's campsite. So just keeping that in mind, we're going down the trail and we're not having any luck. Where she thinks she dropped it, where she put her vest on, we've long passed it. So at this point, we're just kind of like, I don't think we're going to find it. We're going to have to wait till morning and we're going to have to try it again. And I look up ahead and I see these two lights and they're up in the tree line and it's about at the 12 o'clock position. And I'm like, are we already back at the campsite? Because I thought we were back. And like I said, it kind of went backed up to these people's site. And I didn't want to be like loud and obnoxious as we're going through. Cause at this point it's like 9:30, 10 o'clock at night. And then the lights go away. And I was like, what was that? So I'm like, Jeff, get back here. It's one of the guys who was out there. And I'm like, I just saw these two lights up ahead and now they're gone. Cause I'm thinking, is somebody else out here on this trail with us? Are there hunters out here hunting illegally at night? Like what is going on? So he's like, well, light it up. Cause I didn't have my flashlight on at this point. I'm just kind of wandering. So we hit our flashlights and now at about the 9:10 o'clock position, my light hits these giant eyes and they go up, down, like faster than anything I've ever seen. And then it's gone. And I freaked out. I had like a chill just run down my spine. And it was like, I really understood what people meant when they're like, your blood runs cold, because it was literally like I was frozen in that moment. And I was just like, holy crap. And, you know, I tell them what I see and Marion whips out her thermal. She's trying to find out. She's like, do you want to see? I'm like, no, I'm fine. Like I've seen enough. I do not want to look at your thermal. Cause like I'm already like really trying to rationalize what I just saw and figure out what that is. And, Jeff's like, well, whatever you saw knows that you saw it. And it's now hunkered down back there. Like it now knows that you can see it. And they were like, do you want to turn around or do you want to keep going? I was like, it's fine. You know, we'll keep going. It's okay. Because I should also note that we didn't have any of our equipment that we would normally take. I mean, Marion has her thermal because it kind of hangs from her bag. But other than that, I didn't have anything. I didn't even have my backpack. I had nothing. And so we continue walking and Jeff goes, oh my gosh, like a little bit up. He's like, I just felt like I just saw something black that was paralleling us. And I'm like, what? And he's like, yeah, it took me a moment to just process that. And then we kind of, you know, do the whole thing again with the flashlights. And this time we don't see anything, but we can see some obvious game trails that have kind of gone through there. And we kind of call them big boy trails when they're big enough and large enough for like a large sized person or animal. Not like small game trails, but pretty significant, you know, almost like pass cut in there. And we had headed back to camp, and that was the next day we were due to leave. Cause this was the last night of our scouting trip. And it was just crazy. I didn't know really how to sleep that night. And I was just kind of playing it all in my mind, like everything I had already heard, because earlier in the trip, we had received kind of a warning from a local who we had run into at the campground bathroom saying, you know, oh, you guys going out hunting? Cause you know, again, we have one on the orange and stuff. And we're like, not for what you are. we're hunting for something different. And, you know, we told her Bigfoot, and, you know, that's when she started sharing her own personal encounters with the black-eyed children and the skinwalkers in the area. So I'm like, oh my gosh. And I'd already independently heard from other people about the specific area. So I was just really freaked out trying to figure out, you know, what I had seen and how that was possible and, you know, coming back. And yeah, so that was my Class A sighting. That's awesome. That I had in November.
Yeah, that area of the panhandle, they, you know, from Gulf Breeze over to Mariana and down to Rosewood and Cedar Key and all that, it's that whole area is insane. Tate's in there. Our good buddy Stacy Brown just did a movie about Tate's. Definitely check it out if you can, called Tate. And he's a big, you know, Finding Bigfoot guy up in that area. And which team were you with in that area?
Well, it was the BFRO. I don't know if any local investigators came out for that, but Jeff Prowse is the one who was in charge of that. And Lori Wade was kind of helping him with it. And oh man, I will say when February came around, and we actually had the expedition. We had some of the best, I met some like truly the best people on that expedition, such a wealth of knowledge across the board. And I know when people think of like the BFRO, it's kind of got this reputation of not believing in the woo or whatever, but I walked away with a much different impression of the other investigators. So I think they try to balance the trips out where like they might have like 10 investigators come and then like 8 newbies or non-members. So they balance it. So it wasn't all investigators. There was a good mix. And, but the ones who showed up, I mean, they had paranormal experiences. I mean, at one point in the expedition, we went from like Bigfooting, and I always kind of like love when I'm with people who are like multifaceted and love to kind of just go with the flow and dive into everything. Cause that's kind of how I am. And this one guy, we're at this like 1800s graveyard, and this one spot where we've scouted out, it's along this river. Cause we've got activity, honestly, that entire expedition. We had strange stuff happening the whole time, but anyways, he's like, hey, I'm gonna go put these like balls out on the cemetery on the headstones and see if they want to interact. And then we wound up actually having discord with a spirit while we were out there, and it was just so cool. So it wasn't, I know when people hear BFR they're like, oh, but it was seriously one of the best times.
It's opening up because we've Matt Moneymaker's made some posts about it. Dave Sidoti, our friend down in Ocala area, he's the king of Ocala National Forest. He took me out to the Stewart homestead and all that, and that was one of my favorite encounters out there. So yeah, the BFRO, they get a bad rap. I understand why, because they've done it to themselves, but we love them. We still support them. So, and they're a great place to report. Yeah,
and I think it's changing a lot. You do have people, but you have people throughout the community. It's something we talk about all the time, is that this period are natural. We don't know what it is. So guess what? You don't get to dig your heels in because nobody is an expert yet. Because until we get more research and more knowledge, you can have a lot of information. You could have more information than others. You could be more knowledgeable, but you don't get to dig your heels in. And anybody who digs their heels in and tries to say somebody else is wrong, at least I'm always like, pause, please. Since you don't actually have one of these creatures to do research on, nor, you know, has anyone else, you know, like you can contribute, but don't guess, because we've, you know, it causes, I think, too many people to have a fear of talking about their whole entire encounter because of judgment, and that has to stop.
I agree. And I think too, to your point of we don't have it readily available, you know, in your garage to study. I think too, if you do not keep an open mind and go where the data takes you, if somebody has something that happened, like, so I just did an interview and I was talking with someone who had a sighting, a pretty prominent Bigfoot podcaster had a sighting and talked about the glowing eyes, because I saw glowing eyes, not eye shine, but self-illuminating eyes. And he said that people would come on his show and tell him that. And for a long time, he was like, oh, that's ridiculous. It's not true. I don't believe it. It like in his mind, you know, he never was outwardly said it to anyone, but he always was like, oh, whatever. And then it happened to him. And he said it shifted everything. And he felt so bad because he doubted those people all those years, that when it finally happened to him, it was like life-changing. And so to your point, I really think we have to keep an open mind, because you don't want to discourage someone from sharing with you something that's happened to them because they're afraid you're so rigid that, you know, oh, and then if it doesn't fit the Bigfoot box, because I think that we're going to see a change in that. Like, okay, footprints, for example, I know that there are some like top dog footprint experts out there, right? And that's great. And I think that we're off to a good start. But when people are finding other footprints that they're saying, oh, those are human, or they got to be this, I think like the work of people like Shane Carpenter, who is out of the 400, the work he's studying there. So basically, for the listeners who may not know, 1,000-foot overview of it is it's this 400-acre property that is privately owned. It's not public land, and there's not people on and off of it. So it's a semi-controlled environment in that sense. And there is Sasquatch activity documented on this property, and they go and they document what they find. And they've been finding every 2 years these footprints, smaller footprints, but they have arches, but then they're noticing that over time that they're flattening out. And so that I can't explain that, you know? So I think that if we're too rigid with certain things, like I understand, you know, we don't want to take in everything, but if we make ourselves too rigid, we could be really throwing out good evidence. And it's people like him with the work he's doing that's like, huh, okay, maybe they do have arches until they mature to a certain age. And then the foot flattens to that classic Bigfoot look that we all know.
And we,
well, that's like the toe thing too.
Yeah, like Dave Sheely's down in the Everglades with the four toes instead of the five. And now we're seeing more four-toed prints further north, like they're migrating north, and people are still like, oh, no, if it doesn't have five toes, it's not a Bigfoot. It's
not real.
Well, maybe maybe skunk ape is a different species and we can call them that or something. But we think they're moving, and it's not just Dave. Now other people have found them. So there's more to it. And I think so many people just dismiss. Absolutely. And like we had one of our early listener tales was from someone who's on Finding Bigfoot, and he couldn't say the story to the BFRO because they shut him down because it had a woo factor, but he wanted it out there. So we had it anonymous from us so we could see if other people have had that experience. And sure enough, we've gotten emails. People have had a similar experience. And we're like, okay, I don't feel crazy anymore because somebody else had this experience.
That we hear, like you talked about the, you know, dark in the eyes. And then we hear about like, in northwestern United States, you have the ones that seem to have the red fur, right? And then we have ones in North Carolina that a lot of sightings recently we call them white things, and they appear silver, white, or gray, and not like an older version, like every size of them appears with this coloration, which is interesting because we're not necessarily in a very snowy area where they can camouflage themselves well. But, you know, more and more people have seen those, and they tend to be of a smaller stature than a lot of people do. Anyway, just to sit and think that you know better than everyone else, that's one thing on our show. We're like, no. But, okay, so that's your Bigfoot encounter. But you talked a little bit paranormal. And I love that you say weird because you're in Florida, which, as we all know, close to Ohio is the freak show state. You know, like if anything weird's going to happen, it's going to happen in Florida at least once. So what about like hauntings and stuff? You talked about that cemetery. What have been your experiences with that?
It's interesting how much sometimes I was saying these things overlay. It is really interesting. Well, the cemetery, that was really a cool experience because we really started having this discord with a ghost because this gentleman was like, I'm going to put these balls on the headstones and see if we can get it to interact. And he's like, if anything's here and you want to interact, it doesn't take a lot of energy. Just, you know, light up the balls. And nothing was happening. But this one guy who was on the team was like a sensitive. And he was like, oh, I'm just getting this like really kind of bad feeling washing over me. I can feel it from right over there. And we had this spirit box. And so we're talking and asking questions and things. And I'm like, would you prefer that I use candles? Because I always keep these emergency candles in my bag. And I said, would you prefer that I use a candle? I'm thinking, I don't know, it's an 1800s ghost. Maybe these light balls are just too complex. So I was like, let's just go old school and use a candle. And it came back and it said, not all of us. So I was like, oh, okay. So it was like, not all of us would like that. So I'm like, okay, not going to mess with it.
Nope, and I'd be out. I'd be out when the guy said, I have a bad feeling, because I'd probably already have that bad feeling. So I'd be waiting in the campsite for you guys to all return.
Right. Well, and so then this other gentleman, he comes up and he's like, he had been outside of the graveyard because it was like, once you stepped foot into the graveyard, you could feel, honestly, the temperature shifted. It was much cooler in the graveyard than it was outside of the graveyard. And it, the energy in there, you could just feel it had changed. And so he comes in because he had been out there, you know, I think pretty much looking for Bigfoot. And we had kind of decided to go this paranormal route with things. And so he comes in and he bends down to look at one of the headstones. And all of a sudden over the spirit box, it says, come sit with me. And we're like, oh my gosh, because it's literally right as he's like sitting down. It's like, come sit with me. So we were having this discord, and it got to the point where he was like, the bad feeling was just so overwhelming that we decided it was best to leave. But what we understood is it was trapped in purgatory and was we're thinking like the grandfather figure of this family plot, and that it was stuck in purgatory, and like he was sorry for the way that he had treated his family while they were alive. And that's kind of what we gathered from it. And this guy, I think, was just kind of feeling all of that energy. So we wound up leaving and saying a protection prayer and, you know, making sure that we were good when we left. But yeah, that was interesting. I always like doing stuff like that. And I've gotten to go to several haunted locations. The Maestringer House in Brooksville is supposed to be the most haunted house here in Florida.
We love Maestringer.
Oh, yeah, no, that's one of Mark loves the Maestringer House. He's had actually documented on videotape things happen at this Maestringer House.
Yeah, with our good friends, Tampa Jay and Krista Girl. If you look up their YouTubes for you listeners at home, look up the YouTube Tampa Jay or Krista Girl, Real Haunted House, Florida. We caught paranormal activity up in the attic with Gary or Gus, depending on which psychic is telling you his name. It's a G word, definitely a G word. Mr. Nasty to those that don't know. We love the Maestringer House. So you had an experience there?
I didn't have an experience there, but it is a place that I enjoy. But St. Augustine, for all the listeners as well, it's America's oldest city. I know everybody kind of thinks of up north, but it's not the case. And I have done some paranormal research up there, and we've gotten some incredible stuff out of that place. I mean, I feel like that's another, honestly, a place of high strangeness where you can go and you can just feel the air just changes because there's just been so much that's happened there.
I love
it. Oh, yeah. And we have to take a quick break. and we'll be right back, and we're going to talk St. Augustine.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
Confused on where to start with weight loss medication? See the lowest prices available with or without insurance for Wegovy, Zepbound, and more at TryLifeMD.com. 95% of LifeMD patients said starting their weight loss journey was simple. Listen to Tara's story after losing 42 pounds.
You just take your shot. It doesn't feel like you're on a diet. What I wasn't expecting it to do was to shut off the food noise. I had gone from 237 to 195. This was life-altering, and if I can do it, I feel like anybody can do it.
Get your free insurance benefits check in minutes right now at TryLifeMD.com. Nearly 96% of patients said they would recommend the LifeMD program to anyone who wants to lose weight. Get started right now at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
Destiny Beard, the lyrical soprano who will haunt your dreams. With her alluring melodies and intricate harmonies, this dark siren of wistful song shall capture your soul and lead you into the night. Check out Destiny's new single, The Haunting Is Over, with international musicians Sam Haynes and Gary Bennett, as well as her other musical works at destinybeard.com.
We're back. That was very quick. I had a drink from my Bucky's cup.
Yeah.
That I had a whole conversation about the other day because I was explaining to someone, they're like, why would you do that? And I'm like, it glows. And I literally brought him into the room, shut the door, and showed him it glows. And I'm like, therefore, I never knocked it over in the middle of the night.
We had a paranormal experience.
That's actually a genius.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, all of their Halloween cups, the outsides glow a little bit, but their lids glow. So it's the middle of the night. You can grab your cup and not be like fumbling for water in the middle of the night when you get woken up by weird crap like I do.
I've never been to a Bucky's.
Oh goodness. There's one opening in Ocala sometime next year, I think.
I'll be right outside. I'll be there opening day.
That's
Bucky's. We should all meet up.
There's one in St. Augustine now. There's one in St. Augustine now. So next time you visit. We had a paranormal experience here with the Bucky's thing. The other night I saw this strange glow in my room and I freaked out, and then it was my wife's glowing Halloween Bucky sweatpants that I didn't notice. It left them on the dresser and I didn't notice. But So St. Augustine, I love Tolomato Cemetery. That's the one that we've seen the little boy up in the tree. We've seen a couple other weird things there. What's your favorite place in St. Augustine?
Well, funny enough, at that same cemetery, I captured some orbs on camera. I got some very good orb footage from that cemetery. And it wasn't until I was going back through the footage, and you can really clearly see it, and I was taking pictures, and I had on your iPhone how you can turn on the live photos? I had that turned on, and I was able to really clearly watch this orb form and then go away. And it was not a bug. It's not a lens flare or anything like that. I mean, you can clearly see this orb. And so we did an investigation there, and that was really cool. That was some of the best stuff I got out of that, was the orbs. And then we went over towards the fort and we were doing some stuff over there. And I believe we had made contact with one of the soldiers, and the EMF reader was just going crazy. And it was almost like we're in the front of the fort. And what I just pictured is like a soldier standing out front, just walking back and forth, like in a time loop. You know how a lot of apparitions and things like that, they're just living their lives almost as if they don't know that they're ghosts or that they're dead. And it would just go off as if something was just kept crossing in front of us back and forth. And it was like, I just pictured like a soldier on watch, just moving back and forth. So that's one of my favorite places. Every time I've gone to St. Augustine, we've always gotten activity, like every single time.
I always love, I love doing the I-4 dead zone, which I sadly just recently had to get quoted as debunking in a Florida newspaper. like, no, Charlie invented the name. He invented kind of the story, but it's become a tulpa. Things happen on the I-4 dead zone. But then I usually start there, and then you hit Casadega, and then you head over to St. Augustine. So you get the trio of weird right there. Now, you've been doing Dark Florida podcasts for a little bit now. So what is your favorite story that you've done out of it so far?
What is one of your
favorites? One of your favorites, if you can't pick a top one.
Favorites, because people get upset that theirs is not the favorite. So,
well, thankfully, it's an unsolved mystery. But the lead mask case.
Oh, wow.
I love that one. Yeah. And are you guys familiar with that at all?
Eric isn't. So tell her all about it.
Do tell. I'm going to get freaked out, but go.
So it's this unsolved mystery from Brazil. I want to say in the 1960s, these two gentlemen were found dead on top of a hilltop wearing these just really crudely cut lead eye masks over their eyes. And there was no obvious signs of trauma or anything like that. I think that they still had all their belongings, so it wasn't a robbery. They were found with like a mysterious piece of paper in their pockets that said 4 p.m. ingest capsules, 6 p.m. put protection on eyes, and just their steps leading up to them being found dead on top of this hill were really strange. They were these two like electronic technicians, and they lied to their families about where they were going that day. They said they were going 200 miles in a different direction. And they wound up going to Rio de Brazil, is where they wound up. And that is not where they said they were going to be. And there was just all this strange stuff. And I think what's interesting about it is they're the theories. So there's the UFO theory, because a few months before they had been involved, it came out in the investigation that they were involved in this giant explosion and UFO sighting that happened at a beach nearby where they were at, that there was this just giant explosion to the point where it registered that the Navy came out and investigated it and didn't know what the source of this was. And so there's just a lot of strange stuff around it. So, and then there was this like call radio operator who was unknown, who they were communicating with. They were also, you bring up Casadega, they were also spiritualists as well. And so there's just a lot of layers to the story. So it really makes you wonder what happened to them, because their autopsy was botched so poorly at the time that the best that we could get out of it, I think, was cardiac arrest. But that was just because I think that's what they slap on almost anything that they can't figure out, because the organs weren't properly stored. So by the time it came around to do testing, they had just disintegrated so badly that they just, and then they tried to exhume it. And, you know, again, because of how long they waited, there was nothing that they were able to get off of it. And their investigation, it was just very strange. The whole thing was very strange. And I think that's just one of my favorite cases.
Yeah.
That is really bizarre.
So many bunny trails there, because there's that one of them had a cousin in a cartel, but they don't think the cartels were involved. And one of them, there was all this crazy stuff when you start deep diving that.
Yeah. And there's this like whole time. So when they retrace their steps, there's like a whole hour and a half gap where they is unaccounted for. So they know what they did up until this point, but I think it was like an hour and a half or 2 hours of time that they cannot account for. And someone did claim that they saw them in a Jeep getting a ride. And when they say hill, I should note too, it's not this like pretty hill. It's this very difficult rock formation sort of. And yeah, they were last seen in this Jeep with these mysterious men, and the next thing you know, they are dead on a hillstop.
It reminds me of the Detlef's Pass thing, where what happened, it's weird. And you know, it's so interesting, because also with all the technology we have now, right, that doesn't necessarily solve the situation. Sometimes it just makes it even like weirder. Like there's that one true crime case of those two little girls that they finally figured out who killed them, right? But they had cell phone footage, they had pictures, they had all this stuff, and it took them what, 30 years to figure out who did it?
Not quite 30, but it was a while. Yeah, it was a while.
Yeah, but it just fascinates me, those things. And then it's a wonder if anyone will ever go, hey, I think I figured out what happened. But Then again, they just could have been weirdos.
Yeah.
We don't know. But it sounds bizarre.
It's almost Aurelian.
Yeah.
Like, we're going to go join the spaceship behind Hellbop. So we're going to follow these.
And that was part of it, is that they found this like literature in their workshops. I think it was something about like life on Mars. It was this kind of book that was told almost by like a god. And they thought they may have received instructions from beyond the veil.
It's an odd case. All right. So you've talked Bigfoot, you talked ghosts. What's your favorite other cryptid?
Ooh, favorite other cryptid? Probably the crawlers.
Okay.
That's a cryptid,
about
right?
Those?
Yeah. Oh yeah. And here in Florida, like I was saying, where we were up in the panhandle, I had a firsthand encounter, with a woman who shared her story at I can't say where it is. But it is a cemetery where basically these homesteaders had tried to settle the area, and the local indigenous tribes and them, they had clashed, and there was a pretty brutal murder that had happened there. And so, of course, when something like that happens, it's just a harbinger for bad energy. And she had gone up on this river that was there and had gotten out at this location, and they were going to hang out, her and her friend, they were going to have lunch, because this was open to the public. It's now closed. And when they got out of their boat, they said that there was a crawler, a rake type thing, down on all fours, and had screamed at them, and that she just ran right back to the boat and got the heck out of there. So I heard from her, and she shared that on that same river were those black-eyed kids that her and her grandfather were going along, and they look over, and there's a woman and two kids, and they're in white linen, and they just have black eyes, and they're just waiting in the water, just staring at them. And she goes to tell her grandfather, "Hey, did you see that?" And he goes, "No, you didn't." And they carry on. And she was like, "That tells me he's seen them before," and just was like, "Don't give it your energy," type of a thing. And then a friend of mine, she has been on the show and shared her experience. Again, before she even knew I was going there, she had one of these crawlers go out in front of her while they were crossing through this area, come out while she's driving, and it took up a whole lane and a half of traffic. And she said it was almost like a distortion in time, like its body was up here, and then like the back half like caught up with it, and that, you know, it absolutely scared her beyond belief. Her boyfriend was sleeping. She like woke him up. This is this really like long stretch of road through nothingness. So those are some stories that stand out. And then I've heard from other people in that area as well. So there's definitely crawler activity here in Florida. That interests me a lot because we hear it called different names. And I know that a lot of people sometimes refer to it as a skinwalker, but from what I understand is that it's more of a regional term to the Navajos. Yeah. And so out of respect for them, and we're in a different area, that's why I lean towards calling it crawler or that rake that you hear, but I'm just really intrigued about whatever that is.
Yeah, but
well, you know what? It's interesting because I heard the term rake because that's a creepy pasta, isn't it?
It started as a creepy pasta, but yeah.
Yeah, creepy, that term. I just have to keep this all in my head, Brooke, because Mark will just rattle off crap for hours. And I'm like, oh my God, what are you doing? But it's interesting because I feel like I wonder what kind of creature this is, because when they talked about skinwalkers, the Navajo did, and they call them other things here, those more come off assuming the guise of something familiar to you. So you will be lured into their situation. Even Spearfinger, who's, you know, mentioned in our book, does this, like, appears to be an old lady or appears to be a young maiden, depending on her audience, to lure you in to do it. So I kind of wonder what these the things that you're calling rakes truly are.
The crawlers don't seem to change shape. They tend to stay one in some of my reports. Now, some have do the where they turn almost werewolfish, dogmanish, and depending. And so it's really tough to classify because it depends on the sighting. It really is the observer, I think, sees what they want them to see sometimes. And that's why the shifts and, like you said, the time distortions and all that. We had a Tampa Bay story that was literally in an apartment complex in the middle of St. Pete. And it's like, wait a minute, that's daylight. There's no woods, no nothing anywhere. It's all downtown, but it's the guy didn't even know what the hell a skinwalker or shapeshifter or anything was. Somebody told him email Mark at Weird Florida and he'll, you know, at Erie, Florida, and he'll tell you what it is. And stuff like that just gives me the willies because I'm like, oh my gosh, that's right in town. So what are, is it an energetic thing? Is it a, that's a true. Nature spirit? Who knows? Well, and who knows?
If it helps, it, the kind of the description of it too, that I've heard consistently from the people in this particular area is that it's almost like a skeleton. If that makes any sense, something like almost like a sick, dying, I don't want to use the word zombie because it's, I don't think it's that human, you know, but a humanoid shape that just is like emaciated and like bones almost, I think is the best way. Almost, I almost like demon-like in the face of just like that, it's, just, darkness and just the bones. Yeah.
And that's why so many people up here, the skeptics, all say, oh, it's a bear with mange. And bears with mange are scary looking, but they're not this. And we've had hunters tell us when they've encountered them, and it's not this. This is definitely a whole nother ball game, gang.
You know,
it is.
It's interesting because you kind of talked about getting kind of frozen up and stuff. And I call it the lizard brain, where that survival part of you goes, no, nope, not, you know, like doing that. And it's interesting when people encounter some of these creatures that that sort of happens in like that, that immediate like, blah, because there's not a let's, you know, run, let's do it. It's just, okay, there they went by, you know, which is, I don't know. I think that's fascinating. So what adventures are you on? What is coming up next for you?
Well, about a month from now, I'm going on a private expedition. I was asked to be a speaker at this camp out in Tennessee. So I'm really excited. I was able to go to Tennessee last year for the Great Smoky Mountain Bigfoot Conference. And I almost forgot, we stayed in a haunted Airbnb while we were there. So that was interesting. But I'm so excited to be able to get to go back to Tennessee again. We're going right over the Georgia line into an area that the BFRO has hosted some previous expeditions and had some activity. This is not with the BFRO, but going to be a campground that they do frequent. So I'm really, really excited about that one, to just get out there and collaborate with some Eastern Tennessee researchers. I've been, ever since we went out for the conference, I've just been dying to get back there because it's just, I don't know, it's beautiful.
Are you going to a lot of weird conference again this year?
I'm thinking about it. I'm going to try. My friend and I, we're weighing it out because I'm currently, we're deciding if I'm going to go on the Ohio or the Arizona expedition with the BFRO later this year. So I'm just trying to figure out some travel stuff. Always but
well, we will be there. So if you're there, come see us.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, absolutely. I definitely
will. We live in Western North Carolina. So we've got right south of Eastern Tennessee. So we can help you out if you need anything. So
yeah,
absolutely. We've got some Airbnbs up there and, that are friends of ours. So we'll happily set you up. So
cool. Oh, really cool. Fun themed Airbnbs. Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, really? I love
it. We got a good witchy one Airbnb. And we got a good fantasy one. So it's almost like you're in a hobbit hole, stuff like that. So they're fun. But okay. So we've done a little bit of your paranormal experiences. We've done this. You are a Boots Underground investigator. So let's say somebody wants to go investigating. What are your top tips? First for Bigfoot and then for ghosts.
Top, right. Top tips, keep an open mind. And like you were saying, there's things that happen right in your city. So I would do my research about the area that I'm going to extensively. It's always good to use things. There's an app called the Bigfoot Mapping Project. It is $2 on the App Store. It's the best $2 you can spend. Now it has everything from John Green sightings. This is if you're in Florida, but it has categorized data from the BFRO and other reputable places. And you can look and see the date of the sighting, time of day, time of year, when it occurred. And I would look for an area that has some noted activity and I would go there. Keep an open mind. Do not go by yourself. I'm not a proponent of solo hiking. I always say, you know, you need to bring a buddy. I mean, go watch one of the Missing 411 films. And that's scary enough because a lot of those people were with other people. Yeah. So I definitely recommend, though, safety first. And, you know, you'd rather need it than not have it, than have it and not need it. So always come prepared. And I think if you have a thermal, that's great. But if you don't, I would keep, you know, we've been playing around with the best way to carry some casting material on us, because if you're just straight up hiking, whatever you put in your pack, by the time you're coming back, you're going to be tired. But we also, like down here, we utilize e-bikes and things like that to help us go a little further. And sometimes you're out there and you don't realize how deep you are, and you come across something that's questionable or a print that looks interesting. So it's always good to keep that little setup in a small water bottle, at least enough to cast one print if you're going in far. Definitely carry casting material with you because you never know what you could see.
And when you go in search of phones in the middle of the night, take your gear with you. When something is stalking you in a tree, you can document it.
And you know, I went back and I drew a picture on my phone of what I saw on my notes app. And I think that's another thing too, that I like to tell people. I think taking notes while you're out in the field is so important. And it's one, I know it sounds like such a simple tip, but it literally is, it's the most valuable thing, because unfortunately what you think you're going to remember, you're not. So we always document when we go in the time, the weather, what the conditions are when we arrive, who's there, where we're at, what we're doing, because you will forget. And especially if you're doing this a lot and something happens. And another thing, if you're out there with a group, sometimes we coordinate things like, okay, I'm going to do a knock or I'm going to do a howl, and we'll notate the time. Okay, at 7:52 p.m., we did a howl. And then you can cross-reference your notes, especially when your groups split up and was like, was that you that did that howl? No, we thought it was you. No, it wasn't us. Okay, now we might have something legit here. We may have really had an interaction happen. So I think taking notes is so important. And if something happens to you, write it down in as much detail as you can remember as soon as possible after it happens, because you will forget things. And I just think, while it's fresh in your mind, tell somebody, write it down, document it, so that way you can come back and look at it later, because your adrenaline's going to be going.
Yeah. And that's one of those things, like okay, you said, having the infrared or just having a camera, have it ready, because the average sighting is what, 10 seconds, 15 seconds tops?
If that.
And it's, you know, usually under, yeah, 10 seconds. Right. All the BFR documents all say under 10 seconds. And think about how long it takes you to get your phone out, turn it on, hit the camera app, or hold the button to get the camera going. That's 10 seconds right there. That's why everybody's like, oh, we all have cameras, we should have got all this footage. You try to get a picture of a deer while you're driving down the interstate, you got a minute to see them, you're still going to get a blurry picture. Mm-hmm. So it is.
That's why the moment we park the car, we pretty much get someone in the group is in charge of the recorder, and we get that recorder out, we get it going, and we start documenting. And a lot of, I do it too, but the GoPro, pro tip here, putting it on your head. Because if you keep it on your chest or somewhere else on your persons, you're holding it, the first thing you're going to do when you see something, you're going to turn your head and your chest is still facing forward. So there's lots of really cool rigs you can do, or clips if you don't feel like wearing the crazy headband. I know I'm always like, oh, this has got to look wacky. But when I'm out in the swamps, it's like, who cares? I already look horrible. So, but yeah, put it on your head, because when you see something or you hear something and you go to turn out of that reaction, whatever you have on your head is going to capture, hopefully, what you saw.
I got one more question. Erica, do you want to go one more before mine?
Well, I wanted to ask, what is your dream hunt? What is your dream place to go and explore? If you could go anywhere in the world, where would you go? Oh, gosh,
anywhere in the world? Well, for Bigfoot, I definitely want to do Banff. I really want to do that Banff, British Columbia area. I would love to go up there and check out that region. gosh, first of all, it's gorgeous. And secondly, there's the stories that come out of there, just especially from that Pacific Northwest area. I would love to get over there and do an official haunt. I've been really looking, especially in Washington State, looking at doing some extended camping out there and just seeing what we come up with. But I always have had a dream to go to Iceland. I'm always intrigued by the trolls and the elves that are out of Iceland.
Little people. I've been to Iceland. They call them little people.
Yes.
I had a captain on a boat tell me an entire story about his experience encountering the little people. It is very embraced over there. And if you walk around, there is a chance of seeing them.
I want to do that. That's probably like my number one bucket list. I know it has nothing to do with Bigfoot, but I'm dying to get there.
It's part of the preternatural world. It is absolutely gorgeous there. You are not going to be prepared for the wind. Doesn't matter what time of year.
Really?
Wind. Huh. So much wind. Yes.
Like colder and bitier than Florida wind, but the same intensity, but doesn't stop.
So. Doesn't stop. Like, we'll rip your car door off if you are not careful. Like, when you rent cars, they go, make sure you hold the door when you're getting out and close it. Don't just open it because poof, it can go right away.
Wow.
Yeah. So, weird thing to be aware of, but that's a thing there. So, Mark, what's your final question?
My final question is, so if you're starting to get stories from others, you're getting encounter reports, you got your own podcast, that's what happens, it starts snowballing, and you've been doing this investigation for a little while. I know, still starting, but I'm so fascinated with your career because it sounds very familiar to something I did 30 years ago. But have you had something yet that has changed your perspective? Something that you start a certain way, and then at some point you're going to get that thing that makes you go, ooh, wait a minute. So have you had that moment yet?
Well, I definitely have had a moment where I'm like, what am I doing? to your point, Erica, of like, oh no, I'm in the graveyard. Honestly, after I had my sighting, I did kind of go back and wrestle with that a bit, because here's the thing too. When you talk to enough eyewitnesses, it's a trauma for them, especially people who aren't kind of crazy and weird like us, who enjoy this stuff. And we are aware of it and we're out there looking for it. It's that everyday person who's just on their way to work or just doing regular things out on just a normal hike and something happens to them. And if they have this trauma, like my nanny, she had trauma. Like, you, every time we would talk about it, you could tell it scared her. It left an impression on her. And so after my sighting, I was like, am I nuts for doing this? Because we don't know what we're dealing with. I don't know what I'm up against. I don't know, how do I really protect myself in the situation that this something goes awry? So I have had those thoughts and that doubt almost creep in kind of after it happened, like, okay, let's do that. You know, let's do this check. But honestly, I think, I feel like I'm called to do this and I feel like it aligns with my passion. So I have, that was kind of just like a moment that did change me in a sense of like, I really had to like do a self audit and go, okay, you got what you wanted. You know, where do you go from here? And are you playing with something that is much larger than you? And, so kind of just more of like an introspective moment, because I think I've always really tried to keep an open mind. I think that's something I do pride myself on, is that I'm also very fair. I'm a Libra. So I'm balanced. I'm the scales. And so I will listen and I will come to, and I have really a good intuition and gut. So I just keep an open mind. And when I talk to people and I hear their stories and experiences, I listen to them. And I think that that's just, you know, that's the thing for me. So I haven't heard anything too insane yet that has deterred me, but
Still got to keep the skeptical mind a little bit. That's the whole point. Otherwise,
absolutely,
you're not doing science for this. So you're just, we're storytellers. We collect stories. That's what I do. I go with Bigfoot hunting teams, UFO hunting teams, ghost hunting teams. I don't consider myself an investigator. I'm there for their stories and for the things they encounter. But that's what's changed me and made me do the things I do, because it'll mess with you. Brooke, shameless self-promotion time. So tell us where our travelers can find you.
You can find me on Instagram at Dark Florida Podcast, YouTube, Dark Florida Podcast, anywhere where you get your podcasts. I'm there if you just search me. If you want to connect on Facebook, you can look me up at Brooke Moreland, and I post updates about the show and sometimes behind the scenes investigation photos and things like that of all the crazy adventures that I'm on. So that's where you can find me. Feel free to reach out and follow along with the journey.
All right. Well, we'll put links to that all in the show notes and links to Dark Florida Podcast, which you're on all the platforms like us. We're pretty much everywhere. So good, good. Erica, any last words?
Brooke, I'm excited to meet you in person whenever that gets to happen. So, and if you ever need somebody to tell you a feeling of an area, I'm incredibly good at that. That does not mean I will go into the area with you, because very much like the friend that went, no, too much negative energy. I wouldn't wait around for that to crescendo the way they did. I would be like, yeah, nope, gone, gone. You guys can hang out if you want to.
Yeah.
And I'll be one.
Oh, absolutely.
Taking you to the haunted milkshake bar. So it'll be all good. So, so with that, thank you, Brooke, for coming on. We will see you soon, I hope. And looking forward to your future adventures. And I tune into Dark Florida. I love it. With that, travelers, thank you so much for joining us. For Patreon members, thank you again. And for all of you who listen, like, share, subscribe, and do all the things, push all the buttons, the bells and whistles, whatever you got to do. We appreciate it so much. Definitely check out Eerie Travels Presents Dark Side of the Smokies. We have the link for the pre-order in the show notes. It is a hefty book. It's bigger than any of our other books from the Eerie Florida, Freaky Florida. It's like triple those. So you can use it to clobber somebody, the hardcover. And it's color printed.
No,
color pictures.
No, I'm telling people that.
To protect you from a dog man or a Bigfoot. But anyway, all that said, when you're out there traveling, we've got plenty of travels for you on this one. Go to St. Augustine. Go to the Casadega. Go to the Panhandle and a lot of the Florida Triangle area. There's a lot of fun places you can go. Look them up. You'll have a grand time. And when you're out there, you see the dark-eyed children or you see the glowing eyes in the trees, just remember, keep an open mind, document, document, because if you don't keep that open mind, that closed door will get knocked off its hinges. And we'll see you on the other side.
Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Right now, get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Plus, get three Scotts NatureScapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details. Excludes Alaska and Hawaii.